All right, and welcome back. I am joined by Gray Robertson, Out of the Box Podcast, SEC Radio, everything for Alabama, the Alabama Crimson Tide. Gray, thank you for joining me again. It's been too long. Last time I saw you, we were at Cattleman's in Oklahoma City sharing a steak dinner that, I believe I won a bet.
Wow, you're going to come out that hot already, 20 seconds into the video. Thanks, Tara. Good to be back.
So Gray's joining us from Florida. Where are you in Florida, Gray? He's at the Florida Gulf Coast League. They're moving fields all around, but where are you currently located?
So I am at our beautiful coaching village area in Bradenton, where we're all living. I've got my own cottage. So this is where I'm residing as we wait out whatever's going to happen with Tropical Storm Elsa.
And the FGCL is in its second year. Gray has pretty much been there from the beginning. He knows everything about all the teams. You've got a handful of teams there this year. It's growing significantly. The Circus, we'll start off with the Circus. They're in the top spot, led by Carson Gordon. As you said earlier, they've kind of taken on a little Carson Gordon personality, the Circus. Tell me what you're seeing out there this summer, and talk to me a little bit about the Circus and how they've been playing.
Well, I kind of made maybe a foolish, but I think somewhat accurate Oklahoma comparison with the Circus, because this offense 1 through 10, it's pretty ludicrous. I mean, I'm looking at the stats right now. There are three players who are hitting under 300, and everybody else is 350 and higher, multiple over 450. Stormy Kostelnik is almost hitting 600. Her OBP is at 717. I mean, you know, it's a summer team, so we're not going to say they have a generational offense, but there is literally no time to take a breath when you're playing the Circus. And what makes them also interesting is we're seeing the pitching kind of come around a little bit more. Jenna Green got off to a rough start at the beginning of the summer, but has really rounded into form and isn't giving up those big hits and those big innings as much anymore. Sarah Willis had, I think, her best outing of the summer the other day when she came on in relief in extra innings to shut down the Lynx a couple times in some dangerous situations. So, you know, I see with the Circus a team that if we were playing double elimination softball when the playoffs come, which we are, then it's going to be tough to beat them twice.
I mean, Sarah Willis, we got a little Washington contingent going over there.
Yeah.
Willis and Stormy. Stormy's a great kind of story as well. She, you know, she didn't get to play that much at Washington, entered the transfer portal, and she's just tearing it up there. And I think the Florida Gulf Coast League has been great for kids like that.
Absolutely.
And we talked a little bit about this in terms of the transfer portal, and you know, they had a workout. You guys had a workout last week on Thursday. Kids that are currently in the transfer portal were able to work out for coaches to see them. Talk to me a little bit about what you saw last Thursday during that workout. And it was a morning workout. And who surprised you or who stood out to you during that workout?
Well, it was interesting to watch because we were still, you know, we thought we had weather coming in, so things were kind of moving around all day. And so they hit a bit, they played some defense, and then the pitchers threw four different pitches for 1 minute. And I thought the people that really impressed me, Kenna Wokey, you know, she can do her thing. She's still trying to shake off the rust and get back into playing shape after really not throwing a competitive game since that epic USSSA match where she went five innings of shutout softball against professionals, which I still contend was the best pitching performance of 2020 and at any level. And and she also hit really well. And I thought Leanne Matthews hit really well also. And she's, you know, another Circus member. But she was able to put some balls out of the yard. And I thought it was just really interesting to see so many players showcase themselves. I thought in particular, it was fun to see where some of these student athletes wanted to play in the defensive drills, because you had some who have played in mostly the outfield in their college career and this summer who wanted to play in the infield and who have been playing maybe a lot of first base go over and play third or second or short, and to kind of see them at least get some work in at some other spots and to show that they can do that. And it was interesting to watch all of that unfold.
And speaking of transfers, Mac Leonard just announced she will be going to Florida State. I know we've been waiting to see where Mac was going to go. Are you surprised that she's heading over to be a Seminole? You know, you've been there this summer and, you know, she's obviously playing in the league. Are you surprised that she's going to FSU with Lonnie Alameda?
No. After talking with her, it seems like the pick that she was most excited about. Honestly, even before, I mean, it seemed like where she just wanted to go from the start. And I think it's a good fit. She can pitch a little bit. Elizabeth Mason, who played a lot of first base last year for Florida State, is not going to be there next year, so that position is technically open. She's got a good bat. I think she fits in well with the kind of system that Lonnie Alameda runs there. And, you know, I told her with some of the finalists that were in the mix, I said, look, you know, all those teams are playing Alabama next year, so I'm going to see you at some point, so I'm cool with wherever you go. But I think that she's going to be really happy at Florida State. And, I mean, you know, it's a Florida State team that, let's be real, they had a great year. They got to the Champ Series, but that offense had question marks all year long. They got hot at the right time, but you can't look at anyone in the face and say that was a good offense or even a great offense or even a good offense this year. They had one hitter over 300. So to have Mac come in who hit over 400 for a couple years, I think adds another quality bat that will raise the level overall for that offense next season.
And we talked about the Florida State offense during the entire World Series. I think, you know, it was back and forth, and, you know, Gray's incredibly good with stats. He gets like all these tidbits, and for a team that was hitting under 300 as a team, for them to make it to the finals in the way that they did is very impressive. You know,
I shared that note with you. I can't remember it exactly, but I know I texted it in the group chat. Going into the Alabama game, they were, I think, 103 with runners on base in the World Series or something, and had still gotten to where they were. And then obviously the bats came alive against Alabama. And then at least in the first game, kind of first game and a half against Oklahoma, you know, sometimes you just get hot at the right time. And that's kind of what Florida State did. But they need more consistency, and I think Mac will be able to add that, especially in an ACC that is getting tougher each and every year.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got Clemson, you got Duke, Florida State now. You know, Florida State pretty much ran that league for, you know, the last decade. And I think it's going to be a good spot for Mac. I think she's, like you said, I think she's going to enjoy the competition there, and I think it's a good pickup for the Seminoles. So with that said, other news this week, the NCAA has come out with some recommendations, some rules recommendations. We're looking at video review, finally. I mean, we've had it in the SEC tournament. We've seen it. It probably works. What are your thoughts on this video review? And I know you've actually seen it live and in action in the SEC tournament. What are your thoughts on this NCAA video review?
Well, I think it's obviously a good move. I mean, we want to get the calls right. And, you know, we have seen that four-man umpiring crews don't necessarily mean the calls that we get will be accurate. Just because there are more eyes doesn't improve the reaction time or the angles or stuff like that on the close plays at first, or just any little thing. I mean, there are so many things in the sport that are so fast now. And I just think it's a great move. I think we saw it work in the SEC, especially this year. I thought 2019 didn't work just because they didn't centralize it. So they had the umpires making the calls themselves, the umpires in the building who had just made the call. This year, they had it sent back to the SEC office where a couple umpires who were on the crew but were not in venue watched the play, relayed their call to the umps on the field. And the calls were pretty much all right and pretty much all done in a timely fashion. There were a couple early that took a little bit, one at the end of Texas A&M Tennessee that honestly we wanted to take a little bit because it would have decided the game. But for the most part, it was done in a timely fashion. They were all correct, and they were all game-changing plays. And I think of Alabama, Kentucky, you know, that first inning, the top of the first, Kentucky scores a run on what looks like a strike-em-out and a stolen base, a caught stealing that was called safe at second, runner at third comes in to score, where on replay you could see that she was tagged out. And so that overturned the call. Alabama would score in the bottom of the first. Things are off and running. That completely changed the game. If Kentucky scores in that first inning, if replay doesn't exist, who knows what that game looks like? So, you know, as long as we're getting the calls right, I think at the end of the day, that's what we all want. Then I'm for any changes that happen in softball.
Yeah. And I think that's what everybody's pretty much looking at. And I think the biggest concern is obviously the time, the time aspect. It's going to take, you know, longer. But also, like you said, we want it to be right. So,
and I really don't even think it's going to take that much longer, because I know there were times when we were all texting in the group chat. And if you're watching this video, the group chat is the D1 Fantasy Softball group chat. Get ready for season two next spring.
Yeah.
but we would say, you know, we're watching the coaches argue stuff, and we're watching kind of, you know, debates and conferences and stuff that, you know, wouldn't exist if replay were there. So it might take a little bit more time, but is it really that much longer than what's already there? I don't think so, honestly.
Yes. And so we've got video review, and then we don't see obstruction in there at all. We don't see obstruction, which, I mean, you and I agree the two most controversial calls in all of softball would be obstruction and our favorite out of the box.
Of course.
Obviously, I mean, Ray Robertson from out of the box. It's obviously his favorite thing to talk about. So they're recommending, let's see here. They're recommending that if the hitter's out of the box and it will be a strike, less than two, but with two strikes, it will be an automatic out.
This is almost got there. Almost there. I'm cool with the strikes. Automatic outs, I think, are ridiculous. We're almost there. We're getting closer, but I can't quite give it the official out of the box podcast state of approval. I think the rule is just too harsh. I think that it's tough to tell anyway. And you see it get called sometimes when a player's got a pinky toe out and not called when half a foot is out. And it's just too complicated right now for umpiring crews to be able to call that and do everything else they're doing. And then also the rule is too strict in general. Again, automatic outs are ridiculous. I mean, that can be a real game changer if you have an out-of-the-box call in the seventh inning with a runner on first with nobody out, and you're trying to lay down a sack bunt, and she's got two toes over the line. Let's say in this new scenario where it's you're probably not bunting with two strikes, but let's say you are. Let's say you've got a really good bunter, and you try that, then – you know, it stalls everything in the inning. And I just go back to the illegal pitch comparison, which that call apparently doesn't exist anymore. I did not see a single one this year. But if that's just going to be a ball, then out of the box call should just be a strike. And the stance I've kind of formed along with Tom Canterbury, my podcast partner, is that, you know, it's a foul if you've got two strikes and you just keep rolling until probably three fouls or so. So we're not here all night if the batter just can't seem to keep the toes within the lines. But at the end of the day, those calls to me are very similar, and I don't know why one punishment is way stricter than the other.
You know how I feel about the rule in general. I obviously, as a slap hitter back in the day, the rule was you could have any part of your foot on the line. And I just don't think, I don't think it was that controversial. You can tell if a whole foot's out of the box.
Right.
And you step on the plate, you're out. Like, I get it. I understand it. But my argument is you've got power hitters that are sitting on the back line, which the back line has been wiped away. We saw it. I saw it in the final game with Oklahoma. They're some of them sitting on that back line. It's the same thing. So the rule to me, I think it should go back to what it was. Not a huge fan of it, but I think adding this in, it's almost there. I do think it's too harsh. I don't think it should be an out. I think it should be a foul.
Yeah, totally. I would be cool with the old rule too. As much as we talk about judgment calls not being okay and when to do replay, I think we can probably make a judgment call on when these slappers are gaining an advantage by how much they're stepping over the line. Because the argument Tom's always made, and I've always backed him up, is if you've got two toes over the line, are you really gaining that much more of an advantage? Will you usually try and slap? No, you're not. So, you know, what are we really doing here?
So, well, speaking of Tom, Tom's coming out there, isn't he?
He is. He will be heading down. So we just shift the schedule a little bit with the hurricane slash tropical storm coming in. So right now, actually, we should be playing, but we're not. And maybe we'll play tomorrow. We'll see how much it rains. As much as I have heard about this tropical storm, it has rained a couple drops today. So we'll see when that comes. But yeah, Tom will be here, and he'll join our little broadcast crew that's getting to call these games, along with Nick Rush and a couple other special guests, hopefully you, Tara. But many other people have been popping in and out, and it's just been really fun to get to watch these athletes come back this summer. And I'll tell you what, Tara, last year, you know, we talked a lot about the mocks and the squeeze, and it felt kind of like a two-horse race from the beginning.
Yeah.
This year, I don't know. I mean, it is a real hodgepodge. There are teams who are in the middle of the pack that have star pitchers that I think could lead them to a championship in this thing. I mean, it is as wide open as it could be.
And so let's go back into the FGCL. Let's talk a little bit about who are your breakthrough performers? Like who are you most impressed with in the circle? I know you just said some teams in the middle of the pack, which in terms of middle of the pack, you got the Finns, the Aquanauts, correct? That's a new team this year, you know?
Impact. They, I'll tell you what, the Aquanauts are a story. All right. This is a team. Oh my gosh. They were not good. Started 0-5. They couldn't find a way to win. They couldn't get out of their own way. The pitching staff was struggling. And all of a sudden, Ellie Cooper and Courtney Gettens whipped them into shape. And now they're sitting at 7-7, currently fifth in the league. This is a team that's, you know, Alexis Groot out of UT Martin, who was a really good arm in the Ohio Valley Conference this year. Laura Bishop, Mackenzie Wagner out of Liberty, they're all starting to really get more comfortable and more confident. And that offense has become potent, and they're scoring runs at a really good clip, getting a lot of hits. Cat Grill, University of Alabama, had a big home run against the Circus last week in the bottom of the sixth. Roll Tide, absolutely. That's one of my two dark horse teams that I think outside of a top three, which to me looks pretty clear, could win the entire thing.
All right, so we've got Aquanauts, and then the Finns as well. The Finns are a new team. Jada McFarland, who I'm a big fan of, she plays at Maryland. She can kind of do it all. She's on the Finns. Who else is leading that offense on the Finns?
So the McFarlands, Maisie and McKenzie, have been pretty good out of Utah State. Kaylee Lusher got off to a tough start this summer, but she's been hitting it much better lately. Kat Rodriguez, Kinley Stewart was absolutely crushing it in week one. You know, this is a team, Lexi Webb is hitting it well as well. This is a team that has got a good offense, and they seem to really actually hit their best in games where Blake Nelliman is starting. So I think that's kind of what makes the Finns a little confusing to me, because they're that other dark horse team I was kind of hinting at. If Nelliman's pitching, they can beat anyone in the league, and their offense does seem to rise up when she's throwing. In other games, it's kind of a mixed bag. So we'll see what they look like come playoff time. They did add another arm in Tori McCann from Texas State, which is a good addition. It's taken her a minute to kind of get back into the flow of things, but she's pitched well lately. And if they've got a really good, solid number two who can back up Nelliman in those big moments when we get to the playoffs, the Finns are going to be a really dangerous team.
And folks, for those of you that don't know, Blake Nelliman, she threw the first perfect game in FGCL history just a week or two ago. And she, I mean, incredible performance by Nelliman. She's just been on fire and just fun to watch. You weren't calling that game, were you?
No, of course not.
Like, really, Gray's not even on that game. Oh my God.
Well, I mean, everybody knows last summer I was like, oh, we called probably 6 one-hit games. I will never forget Mario Hernandez for pulling Jenna Green in the 7th inning in a game where she was throwing a no-hitter. And you know, we had a long chat about that. But, you know, Corey Brooks was on the call. He did a great job with it. I'm lucky that I surrounded myself with good people to make sure that these moments are documented well. And yeah, I mean, you know, she, as I remember it, 5 innings, 67 pitches, 51 strikes. She's been the picture of efficiency this summer, 5 walks to 35 strikeouts. So, you know, again, I mean, Blake Nelleman, she probably, not to tip our hand too much, probably is a front runner for pitcher of the year right now. And when you've got the pitcher of the year come postseason time, you know this, Tara, you know, pitching can carry a team to a championship. So again, when she's in the circle, the Finns can beat absolutely anyone.
I mean, I feel last year we were just talking about the River Mox, like you said, River Mox, Squeeze. It was a big battle, but now, you know, it looks like pretty much anybody can win it. And the playoffs are going to be interesting this year. So the FGCL will do their playoffs, crown a winner, and then they'll be an all-star team. That all-star team is going to play both USSSA and Team Florida. And Team Florida is part of the FGCL, correct? They're the pro team. Yes, no,
kind of. Sort of. Well, yeah. Like all of their players coach. So we're all kind of mixed together.
Which is another great thing, I think, that has come out of this league is you've got young athletes that graduated college. They're now getting into coaching and they're able to coach and play at the same time. So they're actually extending their careers and they're also getting some coaching experience. So you've got a few of those that are on the coaching staff that are on Team Florida. And you've watched Team Florida play. Who stood out to you in terms of the pro portion of the FGCL?
Well, I will first off add that as a broadcaster, it's kind of strange to go from talking about these players, and not going to lie, multiple from Team Out of the Box for the Fantasy League are here playing on Team Florida. And that's what I would say to them when I first met them, to kind of hanging out with them and watching them in person and getting to see them multiple games in a row. And Sammy Williams, I'll tell you this, has not lost a step at all in the couple weeks since the end of the year. She was as legit as possible at Iowa State, and she continues to be just as legit.
Yeah.
I mean, Morgan Howe is absolutely smashing balls over the fence. She has not lost a step whatsoever since Arizona State. And I know she was crushing it at AU last year. And Shannon Sale, I mean, you know, we talked about it a little bit because it's interesting how different the timelines are for so many of these kids. Some of these kids rolled into the league after a month off because they didn't make the NCAA tournament. Whereas kids like Devin Flaherty's had a great summer, and Shannon Sale, who, you know, was on the national championship team, their seasons ended about 5 days before we got down here. So they've kind of been trying to figure out not even more how to shake off the rust, but how to figure out when to rest. And it's been interesting to watch Shannon have to navigate that and being a professional for the first time and throwing against her friends, because there were a lot of Oklahoma girls on Team Mexico. It's been really fun to watch them all develop in their different roles.
And there's probably a handful of players that are in the FGCL that were in the finals. I mean, you mentioned Sale. Riley Boone is there. Alla was supposed to be there, but pulled out at last minute. And then who else from Florida State's there?
Got Kyle Lopresti, yep. Michaela Edenfield. There are a lot of Knowles. More Knowles than I expected. Autumn Bellevue. They're everywhere. And so, but it is interesting because, I mean, you've got players like that who finished their year a week before we all got here. And then you've got, say, just an example. I mean, I've got the Finns sheet popping up on me. Aaron Brown, who pitched at St. John's, and they didn't make the NCAA tournament. So they were done middle of May, early May. So it's been interesting to watch how long it has taken certain players to get into the swing of things and how other players adjusted to, okay, I'm doing this. It's a little less taxing than being in season, but at the same time in ways more taxing. So how do I navigate sleep schedules and rest and the changing game schedules because of the rain every single day? So it's been interesting to watch a lot of these kids have to figure out their schedules and their lives right now.
I mean, in terms of tropical storms, I think you guys are on like 3 or 4 at this point.
You would think.
Oh, it looks like it's raining again. So rapid fire quickly to wrap this up. Player to watch in the circle this coming week. I'm tuning in USSSA Live. I see FGCL. What pitcher should I be watching this week?
All right. Can I cheat and do two?
Do whatever you want, Gray.
Okay, thank you. I love that. I love that we know how to do this. We've done this before. Okay, Alexis Groot for sure for the Aquanauts. As she keeps getting better and that team keeps getting better, she's going to be an arm to watch. And I also think Morgan Scott for the Impact. We haven't really talked about the Impact yet. Morgan Scott, if Blake Nelliman didn't exist, would be far and away the front runner for Pitcher of the Year. And I think it's a credit to her, considering what, you know, all the talk we've had about Nelliman, of how close it is. I mean, Morgan Scott has been really, really good. And she provides a quality arm for the Impact. She's a good 1-2 punch with Savannah Henley. They complement each other well. So that's another team that's going to be dangerous when we get to the postseason. So I would say those two, Groot and Scott, are the pitchers to watch this week.
All right. And then hitter to watch. Well, I'll give you, you can choose 2 or 3 if that makes you feel better. Who's red hot at the plate right this second?
Okay. I'll take one from a couple teams. So for the River Mox, Grayson Radcliffe, she has played about as well as I expected and been really good even for Team Florida. She's suited up a couple times and been really solid there. She's one of the best RBI producers for the Mox. She can do it all over at third base. She's just really special, really dynamic, and it's been fun to watch her play. I will say for the Squeeze, Riley Boone. I mean, what a dangerous little tool you've got up in the top of the order. She can do it all. She can bunt, she can slap, she's got 2 home runs, she can hit doubles down each line. I mean, she finds a way, and she also leads the league in stolen bases. So if she's on, havoc ensues, and that is fun for me as a broadcaster because I love watching all of that play out. For the Circus, Ellie Armistead, not to keep it too SEC-centric, but I am proud to see someone from the league where it just means more absolutely dominating this week. And she has, I know I had to throw that in there. Jen Schroeder, that was for you. She leads the league in RBIs. She has had a walk-off already this year. She, you know, had a good season at Georgia and has really built off of that and come in and been a leader in more ways than one on the field. And nothing gets by her at short. Absolutely nothing. She is really sharp in the field. And finally, from somebody outside the top 3, I'm going to go with Bree Roper, a newest addition to the SEC out of Georgia Tech going to Ole Miss. She has been kind of the reason why the Slice are where they are. The rest of the team has been inconsistent batting-wise. Everybody's still trying to figure out their order. When you're at this point in the season, you're also trying to get everybody equal playing time and give people different looks in different positions and different spots in the order. So that can be sometimes why results can be up and down for some teams. But Bree Roper has been the consistent one for the Slice, and she has driven in the runs. I think last week alone, she had 12 RBIs or something like that. Maybe that was week 2, but she has done it in a variety of ways. She's come up in the big moments in the 7th inning. And, you know, she's the type of bat that could carry a Slice team who's got a good pitching staff that's still trying to, you know, get up to great level. She's the kind of batter that can lead a team into a deep run in the playoffs.
Yeah, and she's going to be a great pickup for Ole Miss. I think she's going to be a nice addition to that lineup. And she, like you said, she's fun to watch. And then, like you said, Armistead, just solid glove, fun to watch, leader, quiet leader, like on the field, just exciting all the way around. I mean, we talk about this all year long. I mean, obviously we talk about the FGCL all year long. And it's just the level of play has gone up significantly from, I mean, in first year it was good, but at this point, and you've got all these powerhouse programs participating. You've got kids that, like you said, had a month off, kids that came right out of a national championship and they're playing in this league. And I think it's only going to continue to grow and make our sport even, you know, better than it is. And we'll close it there. And any final thoughts and how are you, Gray? Like, how are you? Are you sleeping? Like,
no.
Like, you're not. And I think the softball world just is really thankful for you. Like,
well, I don't know about that, but I can confirm not much sleep. These last couple days have been really nice to have a chance to breathe and work. And, you know, it's interesting because at least for me, you know, when I was in charge of my own streaming schedule, when we started a network back in high school, I had to kind of adjust with the flow of certain things, but you know, it was all one school and we're doing everything on campus. So it was pretty easy to fix minor issues here. You know, I'm dealing with a streaming service that I've never worked with before, programs I've never worked with before, at fields that are 25 minutes away. And a schedule with 10 different teams with 10 different sets of players and 10 different coaching staffs. And at least for me, problem solving will be an issue never again after this summer, because we've had to sort through so many different things to try and get games on the air. And it hasn't been perfect every day. And, you know, I think I've told lots of people this. I'm my own harshest critic. So when things go wrong, I'm the one taking it more personally than anyone else. But I do think that this has been certainly a very rewarding summer thus far. And now that we're kind of more in a rhythm and knock on the table, hopefully when the tropical storm rolls through, the weather will somewhat calm down and stabilize. We're going to be off and running and are really ready for a great last couple weeks this summer, because I'm telling y'all, anyone can win this thing. Even the Lynx. The Lynx might be the most talented roster in the league, and they're in last right now. But I think they might have the most top-heavy talent of anyone in this league. So it could go any which way.
Well, I know I speak for a lot of people. We appreciate all your hard work. Yes, streaming's not always going to work, people. Get over it. It's okay. For the most part, the games are on. You get to watch softball in the summer in Florida. You can go out there. I think in general, people are very, very happy. We're always going to have, you know, you're always going to have the ones that aren't.
That's why we have an off the wall segment, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, should we be throwing it off the wall right now? I feel like it's on its way. Like, should I get off the soapbox right now? Because
we have to wait for Tom to do that, though. We'll wait for Tom.
Well, Gray Robertson, Out of the Box podcast, Alabama Crimson Tide, everything. And FGCL. I mean, he's basically doing it all there, too. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's great to be back. I mean, we had a little bit of a break after the World Series, and just happy to be back talking about softball. So thank you so much, Gray. And we can't wait to see what happens the second half of the season there.
Amen. Absolutely. Thanks, Tara. Great to be back.